Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
The Souls of Lost Lake by Jamie Jo Wright. To save the innocent, they must face an insidious evil. Wren Blythe has long enjoyed living in the Northwoods of Wisconsin, helping her father with ministry at a youth camp. But when a little girl in the area goes missing, an all-out search ensues, reviving the decades-old campfire story of Ava Coons, the murderess who is believed to still roam the forest. Joining the search, Wren stumbles upon the Coons' cabin ruins and a sinister mystery she is determined to unearth. In 1930, Ava Coons has spent the last several years carrying the mantle of mystery since the day she emerged from the woods as a 13-year-old girl, spattered with blood, dragging a logger's axe. She has accepted she will never remember what happened to her family, whose bodies were never found, and that the people of Tempter's Creek will always blame her for their violent deaths. After a member of the town is murdered and another goes missing, rumors spread that Ava's secret is perhaps more malicious than previously imagined. Two women, separated by time, must confront a wickedness that not only challenges who they are, but also threatens their lives and the lives of those they love.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today, I have Jamie Jo Wright, and she's a writer of romantic suspense. Surprise, surprise. And I know we're going to have a lot of fun talking about her newest romantic suspense time slip novel. So welcome to my show, Jamie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I know that time slip books are quite popular right now. Have you always written time slip?
I haven't. In fact, I didn't start out with that. I was planning on doing more straight up historical suspense. But my good friend, who was also my mentor, Colleen Coble, actually dropped the bug in my ear and was like, why don't you try time slip or dual time? And I had no idea what that was. And she mentioned, you know, so after she mentioned it, I went and researched it. I'm like, oh, that would be like the perfect marriage between all the genres I want to write just in one. Right. So.
Well, right. So I imagine that, you know, in straight suspense, you have to build the, you know, suspense and the romance and you're, you know, when you're writing romantic suspense, but how does that, what was some of the challenges in writing that, you know, because the if I'm remember, if I'm understanding, I haven't read a ton of time slips, so correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like the, what happened in the past has some impact on the future, right? There's some connection between the two, either someone's investigating something. So how difficult was it or challenging or fun to kind of weave those two different, not just a storyline, but the two different characters together?
It's a lot of fun. And I've seen time slip done a couple different ways where the characters are unrelated, but they're tied together because of an event or maybe an article in history. And with my characters, I usually try and tie them together, whether they know it or not, that they are directly influencing, the past is directly influencing the life of the current heroine. So you can't really separate the past heroine from the current day heroine, because then the current day heroine wouldn't be who they are. So I love doing that and having that influence, because it really shows not just how history in itself affects the present, but also how people from the past, their legacies affect our lives, sometimes with us knowing and other times with us not.
Right, you're right. Yeah. One of my current, well, my only current series right now is not really a time slip, but it, it's the Cold War Legacy series. And I have, the central mystery is based in 1980s East Berlin. It's not, I have a few characters from that time now in present day. So there's not a lot of that time slip, but yet it is interesting because again, you know, how the past does impact our future and how things we don't realize you know, can make those connections. It's so much fun as a writer.
It is. It is. And I, you know, I kind of got really interested in that when I was a kid. I was almost by force because my grandma and my mom were huge on going into antique stores, and they would spend hours there, which as a child is gets really boring really fast, just looking at plates and vases. So I turned it into a game where I was like, I'd find something that looked interesting to me, and then I'd try and make up a story of who had once held it, what happened to them, what secrets did this item have that nobody would ever know about it because the item couldn't talk. And so that kind of got me into that mindset. So when I was getting into writing then, that was like, oh, that's kind of a natural segue.
Yeah, that's fun. I was obsessed with cemeteries as a kid.
Oh yeah, me too.
Yeah. There was this super old one, Blanford Cemetery, in Petersburg, Virginia, near where I grew up. And I would always beg my mom to take me there. Mm-hmm. I wanted to see what I call them, the t-shirt, graves. They were the ones that had like the, on the gravestones, the, like a cloth draped over, but they looked like, to me, they looked like they were wearing shirts. But I would wander around, look at all the tombstones of these old people and be like, yeah, and make up little stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we used to actually, my mom and I used to mow an old country cemetery. And so we'd go every week and we would mow. And there was one gravestone that was, the woman had died in like 1912. Or something like that. Anyway, when I did the math, she was maybe 22 years old when she died. And I, her name was Hazel. I don't remember her last name. And I was like, oh, poor Hazel. So I would make up songs about her and stories about her. And I feel bonded to this 22-year-old woman I've never met and have no clue who she is. But it was all for mowing a cemetery. So yeah, I totally relate to that.
Yeah, see, we're kindred spirits, Jamie.
We are.
I mean, I don't write historical fiction, mostly because, well, I love history. I just don't have the patience to get all the details right. I'll just be honest. Oh, sure.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
But I love reading it. But that those cemeteries, I think about it sometimes. I would always look at the how young some of those kids were. I'm like,
oh, I know.
An 8-year-old is dead next mm-hmm. to my 2-month-old brother. I'm like, this is so sad.
Yeah, like you see this tragic story of child death and you wonder if there was some sort of like typhoid or sickness that went through the house. And then sometimes, have you ever found those cemetery stones where you see the children and you're grieving the loss of these unknown children, and then the mother's right there with the same date of death and you're like, oh shoot.
Yes.
And you're like, what happened? And it's how they put the story there next to the gravestone, which I think should become law.
I think so too. At least a little bio or something.
Yeah, something.
You know, and then I often thought, well, what was happening in history during that time? And I would always, I was just a little bit of a weird kid, but you know.
No, that's okay.
I'm a writer of suspense. So.
Right. I still go to the cemetery sometime and just sit there and write. It's just, I don't know. There's an aura that comes off of dead people.
No, I think you're right. You know, I did, I was a Wreaths Across America location coordinator where we lay the wreaths at, in December to honor veterans at an old cemetery, the oldest national cemetery in the country, the DC Soldiers and Airmen's Home National Cemetery in Washington, DC. But it was just, I mean, it's smaller than Arlington and they have all those, you know, I would just walk through and read all those graves and just be like, you know, they had them from the Civil War through, you know, modern day wars, but you could just see all the sections, the Civil War section. And then they had the, you know, World War I section. And they even had, I think, one or two from the Spanish American War. And then they had, you know, World War II. And you would just read and you just see these young men, and some nurses were buried there too. And women, and you're just, I would just make up stories. I just wonder, you know, an Italian last name, well, how was that work out? You know, when you were in there and all these, you know, you think about all this stuff. It is fascinating just to kind of get your, you know, just think about it. Right. a little morbid, but, so now what about the suspense part of it and the romance part of it? So how do you kind of carry those through the kind of the time slip? Obviously the past person cannot be in love with the future person.
Yeah, I don't write time travel. That's different.
Okay. Right. Right. Just so we have that cleared up.
Yeah. Time travel is completely different. It's not like Outlander. So the suspense is usually, I mean, the easiest way to describe it is typically there's a cold case from the past that's never been solved. And it becomes part of the story of the contemporary heroine's journey. Okay. And it's not like there used to be a show on TV. I think it might've even been called Cold Case.
Yes.
Where it was a police detective who was assigned to looking up old crimes. It's nothing like that. You know, it's not like a police detective story. Mm-hmm. It's usually somebody who buys an old house or gets stuck with the memory of their grandmother's in Echoes Among the Stone, for example. Her grandmother's sister had been murdered years ago and she finally decides to solve the situation. Or the one that's coming out in October, she buys an old farmhouse and finds out that the story of the farmhouse is not this nice, pretty little country farmhouse story. Okay. And, you know, things like that. And so they get sucked into this mystery that took place years ago and has never been solved.
Okay. And how do you... And so in the past, then your other past is what's happening, right? Mm-hmm. Is that the, so those people never, the past people never have the solution.
Sometimes they know the answers, but for whatever reason, it kept under wraps or it just gets lost in history because back in the day, you know, historical records are lost for whatever reason.
Right. Right.
Sometimes in the past, there's always a resolution to the past story, but sometimes it's not publicized for whatever reason, and then it gets lost.
Okay, yeah. And how far past do you go? I mean, where are your? Do you go all over the historical time frame? Do you have a particular era that you enjoy delving into?
Yeah, the oldest I've gone is in the 1870s. And then the one that just released The Souls of Lost Lake is in 1930. So I kind of go all over the gamut between, you know, anywhere between, I would say, Civil War and World War II. I haven't done anything older than 1870s, and I don't know that I will. But you know, it just kind of depends where the characters take me.
Yeah. So how do you start? Do you start with like a idea of a, like we were talking about, like an object or, how do you kind of, where do you start with a character who has a question? How do you, what's your creative process?
My creative process.
With a book idea.
Usually there's an inspiration of some sort of old ghost story or something. So, you know, The House on Foster Hill, which was the first book that I released, was a jump off of a podcast that I've been listening to, which is a really good one. It's called Unsolved Murders by Parcast. It's really good. It's a dramatization. So they narrate and they dramatize the story. And anyway, they were telling the story of this woman who had been found, her body had been found stuffed into a hollowed out oak tree in the 1930s. And to this day, nobody knows who she is. And so I jumped off of that and was like, oh, that would be really crazy if you found a body and then, you know, you just never knew who they were, but yet the readers start uncovering the story along with the heroines and kind of start learning who this person may or may not have been. So that was the jump off for that. And usually it's something like that, that's inspiring a story, whether it's based off of a real life story or it's a ghost story that you hear or something in history that's an interesting time period that's associated with some weird happening, etc.
Yeah, it's kind of, I use a lot of, like one of my stories I based on an article I read.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, oh, that'll be interesting. I have several interesting articles. I'm like, that might be interesting. I'll keep that in the back of my mind on how to do, but it is kind of fascinating how you hear something and your mind just starts going, wow, that's really, and sometimes you hear something and you're like, yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's always fascinating. And, you know, I'm horrible in that I like to watch those on, I think it's Investigation Discovery, but they have these ghost hunter shows, which I kind of watch with a chuckle because I mean, I'm not by any means professional at ghost hunting or not ghost hunting, but I can like see how they're faking probably all of it, but anyway, so I feel like I'm watching the show and it's almost like a dramatization of something that's not really happening, but it looks like it's happening. But I'll watch those because you get ideas from them, because they're always taking you into like an old asylum or an old house or an old penitentiary. And regardless of the ghostly elements of it, there's always a family history. Like I just watched one last week and it was an old house that, you know, they went in to try and find out what was haunting it. But the history that they found at the local historical museum was about a couple who had actually used the house as a refugee place for soldiers during the Civil War who were injured. And so, you know, ghosts aside, the story in and of itself was just chock full of history. And it's such a great way to learn history that's more obscure, because otherwise you wouldn't hear about it because it's not worth a, you know, a documentary, but it's definitely worse than ghost hunt. So
right, because as soldiers, man, they're upset.
Right. Oh, they are. They're out to get you years later.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, and I also think that's why I watch a lot of crime shows. I'm always like, oh, how is the hero and heroine? How are they in peril? What was the motivation behind the villain? You know, you just because they just give you those little snippets that you could just file away and think, oh yeah, I could have this happen to them. That's a great idea. You know, and I love, my kids got me BritBox for Christmas and Mother's Day and my birthday this year.
That's really good presents. That's a fantastic present.
I thought about that. I said, hey, why don't you get one? Cause I was like, we need another subscription. Like we need a hole in the head. Right.
Right. You know? Right. Right. Mm-hmm.
I said, but for my birthday and Christmas, this was great. Four kids, it wasn't that much. I'm like, this is marvelous. But they have, I love this watching their shows because they don't carry guns on, you know, in Britain, the police officers.
Oh, you're right. Don't. You're right.
So it's just been fascinating just to kind of, they just have a few more nuances that don't involve, you know, a lot of, you know, shooting violence kind of thing, which, you know, you need to have the more of those in your in your repertoire than someone pulled out a gun, you know, other stuff.
Right. There's more than guns used as weapons though.
Yes. Yeah. There's more things that can happen. But this was great. So unfortunately we are out of time. Is there anything else you want to add about your writing or your work
before we start? I don't think so. I just, you know, I usually describe my writing as Scooby-Doo for adults. So there's always ghostly elements and hauntings and such that the titles and the covers allude to. But I love that moment where the ghost is unmasked and there's a reason for it.
Yeah, that's a great way to end. So thank you for being on my show, Jamie.
Thank you so much for having me.
You have been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. I've been chatting with Jamie Jo Wright, and you can hear an excerpt from one of her latest romantic suspense time slip books, The Souls of Lost Lake, after this.
Now an excerpt from The Souls of Lost Lake by Jamie Jo Wright. Campfire Tales. Campfires were meant to be places of shadows, in between the flickering light of orange and blue hues, raging white centers, and filmy smoke tendrils lingered the dark places. In these places hid the stories that flavored the tongue of every storyteller, tightened the chest of every listener, and perked the ears of the most afraid. This is the tale of Ava Coons. The story begins. A marshmallow catches fire, flames into a gorge of sticky mess, and falls into the flame, consumed by the raw heat that shows mercy to none. In the days of Prohibition, before the Depression was at its worst, and before Hitler became a household enemy, there lived in the Northwoods, in a place near Tempter's Creek, a backward family of questionable origin. Few in Tempter's Creek truly knew who the Coons family was, and the fact that they lived deep in the forest once inhabited by the Chippewa made them even more of a mystery. But they were a mystery few cared about, and few gave any thought to. Until that morning, the morning of July 17th, when a girl emerged from the woods, her flour sack dress stained with the blood of her family. A gasp follows. A camper flicks on a flashlight for safety. An adult waves it back into darkness. Two girls huddle closer together. The storyteller scans his listeners, identifying them all by the flickering glows against their faces, their eyes wider as they widen with fear. She limped forward, her right hand gripping the thick handle of a logger's axe, which she dragged behind her because of its weight. When she approached, the townsfolk noted the axe was bloodied, darkening the wood of the grip, dried to the tip of its blade. The storyteller pauses. The fire cracks its regrets and its conviction that the story has much yet to be told. It was murder. All of Tempter's Creek knew it. The Coons family's only daughter had brought the weapon to their doorsteps. Ava Coons, a thin, dirty backwoods girl, vowed she knew nothing of what had happened to her family. Vanished was the word Tempter's Creek applied to the Coonses. To the father, the mother, the two older boys, and even the family dog. A search party gathered, and into the woods they traipsed, calling, looking, and very much afraid of the carnage they would uncover. An owl warbles its night cry. A camper yelps at the eerie sound. The storyteller waits until all the attention is back on him, riveted to his next words. There was a lake hidden miles into the forest, surrounded by oak and aspen, a haven for water birds like the wood duck, the loon, and a hiding place for the black bear, coyote, and the raccoon. Few knew of this lake, but that day the search party stumbled on it. Lost in the wilderness, they found its shoreline, and set away in the woods, they uncovered its horror.
What was it?
A camper breaks into the story. The storyteller is not perturbed. Instead, he smiles. That sneaky, knowing smile that the story is only going to instill more delicious campfire fear.
The Coons' cabin was burned to the ground. Its charred remains left only a portion of its southern wall. There was no blood. There were no bodies. The only clues left behind from the horrific scene were a lone shoe that had dropped halfway between the cabin and the lake, and on the shoreline, long rivets in the wet earth, as though someone's fingers had raked into the soil trying to save their life before being swallowed by the lake itself.
Silence meets the storyteller. The campers, enthralled and terrified, are exactly where the storyteller wishes them to be.
And Ava Coons grew up with no memories. They called her the Wood Nymph of Lost Lake. Until one day, years later, when she wandered back into the woods and vanished, just as her family had. The only object she left behind was the logger's axe, leaning against the house that had given her shelter as an orphan child, bloodied once more with the stains of her guardian. Knowing she was a murderess, the town of Tempter's Creek argued over how a girl could wield a logger's axe and dispose of her entire family to the depths of Lost Lake. They argued how, years later, she could have hypnotized them all into believing her to be an innocent, only to be starved for more bloodlust. Assuaged now, Ava Coons was out there, in the woods. She wandered there. She wanders there still. Ava Coons and the souls she has buried there, and the souls she still takes from time to time. The souls of Lost Lake.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.